This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. This is episode 418 for Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. So glad you decided to join us once again, where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two intersect, and we have a good time doing it. When I say we, I mean me and Sally, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. Thanks for joining again.
Good afternoon, Martin, and we should start our show off today with happy birthday wishes. Did you know it was somebody's birthday today?
I bet you're referring to Martin Luther.
I am. Today is the day. I can't tell you how old he would be. Over 500, huh?
Yeah.
Sometime in the late 1400s.
Late 1400s. Yeah, I should. Good Lutherans should know that. But
We do know another special date that's coming up in 2017 when we'll be celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And really, it's been a lot of fun to see some of the buildup around that. We've talked before on the podcast of the little Luthers, the Playmobil little Luthers that are becoming more and more popular. I'm seeing pictures of little Luther everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's making the rounds, just kind of raising awareness about Reformation and the fact that the 500th anniversary is coming. I got a booklet from Concordia Publishing House, and they have a whole line of 500 clothes and mugs and pencils and everything you can imagine with the Reformation logo on it. So seems like it's going to be a very festive and happy celebration. So.
Absolutely. That's a big, speaking of projects, that is one huge project. And one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is a service that they're planning here in the Milwaukee area, and a lot of pastors' conferences and teachers' conferences are maybe thinking about kind of meeting in this area and then joining in on that. Everybody will hear more about that as we go along. But I reference that because that's really our show topic too, project planning. Then there are big projects like the 500th Reformation celebration and all the things that go along with that, a movie and those kinds of things. And there are small projects and everything in between. And I think our churches and schools are sometimes challenged to figure out how best to manage all those projects, because there are just a lot of them, a lot of balls in the air that they have to keep up there and juggling, because those projects are many and varied. If you were tuning in a month ago, we talked about the discovery process when we're talking about a project. As we're writing our little book called With All Your Heart, we talked about trying to pick the right projects, justifying those projects, making sure they're the right projects, and how to get them off on a good start by identifying the desired outcome for the project and then going from there. So lots of things to talk about when it's relating to projects.
And I guess I'm coming around to appreciating the title more and more, With All Your Heart. That's how we started a few months ago on this book project. But it definitely comes into play when you start trying to actually put some legs on those projects and make them happen. And working at it as diligently as we do, obviously we want it to go well and to be a successful project. And I think there are people out there that have a lot of experience with that. And hopefully, Martin, you and I are two of those people that can lend a little bit of experience to defining how to get a project started, how to plan it correctly, how to maybe scaffold it up so that it has all the pieces in place to be successful.
Yeah, we certainly don't know all the answers. We're trying to figure it out as we go, and that's part of the challenge too. That there are different approaches, and it can vary from project to project, And it can vary from project team to project team, how they, you know, what they feel comfortable with. I think the one of the purposes of the book, though, is to identify some technologies that do help. And maybe before we jump too much more into the discussion of some of the highlights of this chapter three on project planning, we focused for a little bit with a member of the Wells Hymnal Committee. Talk about a big project, probably a 15-year project altogether when it's all said and done. Involves many, many people, you know, probably when it's done, 100, you know, people or more involved with this project, spread across the country and probably the world. So we asked Pastor Caleb Bassett, who is the chairman of the subcommittee that I serve on, the technology subcommittee of the Wells Hymnal Project, to talk a little bit about some of the technologies that he used or they decided to use as a hymnal project committee to wrangle this very complex project. So let's listen to what he had to say, and then we can return and talk about some of the things that he suggested. Joining us today is Caleb Bassett, Pastor Caleb Bassett from St. Stephen in Fallbrook, California. Rainy Fallbrook, California. Yes. That doesn't happen very often, right, Caleb? Welcome.
No, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. We are talking about project planning, and you immediately came to mind because you are the fearless leader of the technology subcommittee of the Wells Hymnal Project, plus I'm sure you have a few other projects there at St. Stephen, so wanted to get you on, talk a little bit about some of your approaches as a pastor and project manager. But maybe before we jump into that, tell us a little bit about where you serve and your current Wells Hymnal Project responsibilities.
Sure. As you mentioned, I'm the pastor at St. Stephen in Fallbrook, California. It's a smaller community on the northernmost edge of San Diego County, kind of set off from the highway by a few miles, has a rural flavor and history to it, but also serves kind of as a bedroom community for a lot of commuters, known as the avocado capital of the world, although I don't think we produce that many avocados anymore. Water is expensive, all sorts of things that the locals talk about. And then on the Hymnal Project, as you said, I'm the chairman of the technology subcommittee, and so I have responsibility over that committee, and then I also, by virtue of that office, get to serve on the executive committee, so I'm involved in the discussions about the issues beyond just technology. So I help facilitate things with the executive committee as well in terms of some of the, as you mentioned, the project management, communication, things like that.
So how did it happen that you headed up the technology committee? You have a technology background, an interest in it, a reputation. What got you there?
Yeah, well, I think it was probably a little combination of that. Through starting in high school and in college and seminary, I was building websites and assisting congregations as one of my part-time jobs. And for a couple of years, it was close to full-time or trying to pay my way through school, things like that. And so I had helped a number of pastors over the years on that, and I think that helped at least spread the word that I had some interest in those kinds of things. So yeah, I guess that's probably how my name came up anyway, and then went through the normal synodical processes of nomination and all that after that.
Of course.
Very good. I'm excited because, Martin, you also serve on the technology committee, so we've got two hymnal committee folks here, and I'm not knowledgeable at all about the hymnal committee, so I'm really eager to learn about what you're doing and the important work. I guess in particular, Caleb, maybe if you could kind of talk about how it's structured and how that helped you to decide what kind of technology tools to fit the project.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bigger committee than the Joint Hymnal Committee, which is, for the Synod History folks, that's the hymnal committee that worked in the 80s and early 90s producing Christian Worship, the hymnal we have now in our pew racks. That was a smaller committee. This one is a little more extensive, and so there's I believe it's 13 people on the executive committee, maybe 11, I can't think off the top of my head, but of those 13, six of them are chairmen of subcommittees. So there's six subcommittees. The rest are at-large and officers on the executive committee. Those six committees are hymnody. They're responsible for selecting the hymns for the hymnal. Psalmody, of course, for the Psalms. Rites is a committee working on the various liturgies and rites that will go in the front part of the book and in some of the other resources. Then there is Scripture Committee. They do the lectionary and similar things like that. Like, I think they're going to cover prayers of the day, but they would know better than me. And then two, I guess what we'd call not committees that produce content, like those four, but more supporting committees, communications, which is coordinating the communication at this phase of the project and also will be responsible for a lot of the rollout process. And then my committee, technology, which is answering questions about the role of technology in worship and in a modern hymnal project, down to nitty-gritty project planning or a product planning, and then facilitating and supporting the rest of the committee with the communication in terms of work communication.
And so it worked out well. You guys are all in Fallbrook, California. You get together often.
So the fact that there's that many people involved, and so each of those six subcommittees ranges, I think, from 6 to 12 people. So I think by total count, I think there's more than 50 people across the whole project doing research and development. And they do not all live in Fallbrook. They don't even all live in the same time zone. I think we have people in all four major U.S. time zones, from the Eastern to the Pacific time zone. So it's a distributed group that they work asynchronously. And so that led us to lean naturally towards, the classic sort of cloud-based solutions that would let us work across distances, across times, as effectively as we can. So that's the makeup and led us towards, again, those cloud-based solutions.
So what did we finally decide on to kind of bring this virtual community together and, you know, try and keep some sanity to it in the process?
Yeah. I'm not sure there's any sanity, but we did try to use some tools. But what we settled on was we kind of talked about three main functions and three different tools to do those things, try to pick things that have certain strengths for certain areas. The first one we chose in terms of file storage, we kind of had a big debate over Dropbox or Google Drive, and I think at the time Google Drive was just starting to roll out sort of the Drive features, not just the Docs. And so we were going to do Google Docs no matter what, because already by then that was such a great system. And we ended up going to Drive for all the files across the whole project. So Google Apps basically is sort of one of the cornerstone pieces. And maybe in a little while I can share some examples of how we use it. But the other tool in addition to Google Apps we use, so that's for documents and files. That does a great job at that. But it's not the best for discussions, you know, typing, communication back and forth. And we didn't want to do email with that, because email, across how many people, I'm sure a lot of the people who listen or watch this podcast are familiar with the problems of communicating with more than two or three people via email. So we chose Basecamp for that, because they have threaded discussions, dead simple to use, fair pricing, and some other features that we've also used as well. And again, I can talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. Then the third piece was we had a need for some databasing, basically an access database to store tables of hymns and psalms and things like that. But the problem with access, of course, is it's only on one machine typically, and to make that shareable is troublesome in some of our experience. So what we ended up doing is I've built a sort of a, I guess, custom, you could say, Drupal-based website that's login only for members of the committee, where I set up different content types for hymns and psalms with all the different fields. And it's kind of always a work in progress, but we use that to track the results of our work. One example there would be making sure that every hymn in the database has like a workflow status, you know, where is it in the pipeline, and then like a big one, who's the publisher, so that when the time comes for the publishing house to contact the copyright offices, we can generate a list that says, okay, here's all the hymns that are, you know, in the final list and from the publisher, you know, GIA or Augsburg, or there's a whole list. So that's that third use. That's kind of custom made for the project.
Yeah, watch your microphone there, getting a little scratching.
Oh, sorry.
When you're talking, just keep it away from your chest a little bit. Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, you mentioned that you have a lot of different people involved. I would guess our congregations can relate on a smaller scale with projects that they're trying to carry out and involve a lot of people in things. I'm thinking that those people maybe are at different levels of expertise in their technical skills, or maybe some are even intimidated to use some of these tools that you've adopted as a committee. And I'm wondering how you maybe got over that hurdle to get everybody on the playing ground and involved with the tools.
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. I learned some of this by experience, just getting some of this, some similar tools set up in my congregation. What I learned pretty quickly was, I think if you're rolling out new tools, you have to be really empathetic in the process, where understand that just because you or I can pick up a brand new system pretty quickly, for a lot of people that is the last thing they want to do, and to get frustrated with them isn't going to help anything. And I don't know, I think I read somewhere that like around your mid-30s you stop liking to try out new things, and I'm right around that time, and I'm already sensing that every now and then something new will come out of like, I want to try that. And so I'm able to relate a little more to folks that are saying, why are you throwing, what is a base camp and why should I care, that kind of thing. So what I tried to do from learning that in my own congregation with this group was to say, just be very patient, empathetic, to say, okay, I know this is frustrating for a lot of you, that you're going to have to learn something new and this is going to be work. So I tried to communicate that up front, and then be as supportive as I could to have like steady communication about the new tools. And then one thing I did that I don't know how effective it was, but I tried to make a conscious effort, for instance, with Basecamp, was every time I wrote something, I would write, I'd write really explicitly what I was doing. I'd write something like, hi, I'm posting this new thread in a new topic on Basecamp here, and I'm attaching a file right here on Basecamp where you can download it. And I would, in the body of my message, explain what was happening. Now, people who are used to using Basecamp, they know that this is a new thread and they see the file. But by verbalizing that, when people are reading it, they're being reminded of the system too. The other thing was to just, once we had settled on some things, stick with them. In fact, a lot of these things, if the latest and greatest comes out, we might not switch to it right away. We might stick with something that we know works just because it's a lot of effort to switch. As far as nitty-gritty stuff, too, I created some screencasts where I narrated some demonstrations, not only of how to use it, but why. I tried to cover the philosophy of, okay, why do you have to log into two different websites to do this work? Why do you need Google and Basecamp? And I explained the concept of each one does a job very well, similar to how in your toolbox you have a hammer. It's great for nails, but for screws you need a screwdriver. Each one has their strength. And then finally, I also answered a lot of email and did some one-on-one phone calls with people to just sort of walk them through some things. And we also found that that once a few people got the hang of it, they were able to kind of support one another on their committee. So once some training had been done with a few, it kind of spread organically or holistically. I don't know what the right word there is, but it kind of spread through the group.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me the truth, Caleb. Martin's right at that mid-30s point, too. Was he one of your more difficult ones, or what?
No. I think I was, of course, in the technology committee. We can learn everything pretty quickly. Most everyone was familiar with it. But I will share one thing. So everyone probably has heard of Slack, right? Slack is this hot new communication tool. I thought, well, let's try it on the technology committee, see how it goes. After a couple of weeks, we talked about it. We said, we have no idea why we would use this. And so we just gave up on the experiment, and that was even the technology committee finally, it's like, we're able to communicate just fine with what we got. Do we need to try out this brand new service? No, we didn't and at that point anymore.
Cool.
So even the technology committee, we sometimes don't like to try the new stuff either.
Yeah. Well, there's a fitness for every tool. I think tools like Slack are made for more real-time teams versus us. We're very asynchronous, asynchronous, and it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. So given all your best efforts, I'm sure there are things that aren't going as well, maybe, as you thought they might. What are some of those areas that, we're still struggling with?
Yeah. The one that comes to my mind most is actually with the custom database. We built a lot of stuff into it, hoping people would use it, and some of it was, certain things that we were tracking, like issues and kind of like bug tracking. That sort of philosophy didn't really take off with the group. So that was some time spent developing it. Doesn't really get used. That's okay. Some of that, though, is tremendously useful. I would say the one that's caused the most trouble was honestly the virtual meetings. Getting everyone dialed in to a Google Hangout. And it wasn't so much the software, but, I'm sure microphones, whether a computer has the performance or the bandwidth, that was just really a mess early on. And even when it's working well, there's only so much you can do in those Google Hangouts and the face-to-face meetings that we've had. It's this difficult thing. There's face-to-face meetings are expensive, and Google Hangouts are really cheap. But the different kind of work you can do in each of those sort of formats, you can really tell the difference. So the committee has sort of almost, I think over time, learned, get done what you can get done virtually. We've learned what works there and what really doesn't. And so we're getting better at reserving for the face-to-face meetings the kind of work that really revolves around it. So virtual meetings, I think, will always be a hard point. The other one I would say is, as great as Google Docs is, the mental framework of how their sharing works can be really complex. And then Google, of course, many people will know, they will just roll out a change without warning you. And all of a sudden, like the shared with me in Google Docs was changed to incoming for a while, and everyone was confused, and they changed it back. And Google can just do that. Or how do I know this is shared with someone? Or I shared with the link with you, but I had it set to only people within the domain can get at it. So all these little settings get really cumbersome sometime.
Yeah,
but in that case, over time, again, we're a few years into it.
Yep.
Just by force.
Kind of the price you play with cloud service, price you pay with cloud services. You've got to come along for the ride and kind of roll with the punches.
Yeah, yeah. So those are, I'd say, the things that don't work well, but we're learning how to work around the limitations.
Yep, I've been very impressed with the flow of communication and the seeming order that's applied to a very chaotic process at times. So I think job well done there.
Thank you.
Very good. How about some of the good side of things? What kind of things have you experienced that technology's helped you with?
Yeah, well, one thing I'm excited about is Basecamp just released their third version, and there's a migration process, so I'm going to have to put it off for a little while, but they took almost everything that I found as a limitation in Basecamp in our work, and they've really addressed it and refined it. So there's no easy way to switch to Basecamp 3 right now. They're later in 2016, they're going to do that, so we'll switch then probably. But that I'm excited about because that's going to make that part, the Basecamp component, even better. Honestly, planning for meetings with Google Docs, we've got a real good system now. Basically, everyone's reports are written in Google Docs. Let me give you an example. So the Hymnody Committee, they're working through tons of hymns. They have subcommittees in their own committee, and they'll study the text. They'll study the tunes. There's a Google Doc for the text, and then they all get to comment on it. They make a proposal. That goes to the executive committee for ratification or recommitting. And then on the executive committee, we split into a text group and a tune group to where we kind of do some advanced work reviewing this stuff so we can make recommendations and speed up the process. And we do that on Google Docs. And through the whole process, you get to see everyone's comments. You get to see the history. You get to do the little inline comments there and respond to them. And so that's just going great. And then we make like a... The fact you can hyperlink these documents together, we make a document index for every meeting where everyone in the meeting just pulls up that one doc and then they can just click and go to right down the line. We've got a really, I would say, pretty well-oiled machine on that by now that I can't... Professor Jim Tiefel from the seminary was on the Joint Hymnal Committee, and he said they just mailed big fat reams of paper back and forth to one another. You know, and it's for me, and having never worked that way, it just seems almost impossible to have gotten that work done. But they did, of course, and they did a lot of it face to face. But so that's one thing that I think is going really well. Like I said, Basecamp for discussion works well too.
Awesome.
So maybe to close out our conversation, Caleb, can you give us a little bit of a sneak preview of some of the digital products that we're maybe thinking of including with the new hymnal?
I can and I can't. So for business reasons from Northwestern Publishing House, and if they're watching, you know, hello, I'm gonna follow the rules here. I cannot comment on any planned or unplanned, or, you know, it's the whole I can neither confirm nor deny sort of thing. But what I can tell you is what's going to be going in our public field test report, which will be coming out to the Synod in the middle of next year, that our committee has four main areas of emphasis where we're looking to develop products, whatever they might be. The first one is sort of a behind-the-scenes thing, which is we want a cloud-based, centralized, digital database of everything that the hymnal entails. So all the data from the pew edition, the extra resources, the occasional services, all of it stored in a big fancy relational database, and that can be the foundation for other products. So that's the first area of emphasis that we're working on. The second is we see a great opportunity to assist pastors and worship planners with planning and preparing for worship using the resources that the new hymnal will have. So that's the second area, worship planning. The third area of emphasis for us is to find a way to bring the content of the hymnal into the personal lives of the members of our congregations through some sort of digital format on a mobile device. And then the fourth one is we recognize that musicians play a huge, of course, role in worship, whether it's choir members, choir directors, soloists, instrumentalists. They have to deal with a lot of digital assets nowadays, PDFs, audio files, just a big mess of files. And in a modern hymnal, there's going to be a lot of that, a lot more than there is now even. And we want to find a framework, whatever that is, whether it's a specific product or a method built into other products, to assist them in organizing and getting the files and the scores or the music that they need to do their work effectively. So those are the four main areas: a database, assisting with worship planning, looking at mobile applications for lay people, and then a framework to support musicians.
Well done. I knew you really couldn't answer that question, but I wanted to see how you handled it.
Yeah. So. I've never had to give the I can neither confirm nor deny, so that's right. A little exciting for me.
Now it's even on video. Yeah. Caleb, thanks so much for taking the time. I realize you're a busy guy. In fact, you're getting on a plane not too long, tomorrow, Milwaukee. Yeah.
The executive committee meets this week. We'll be plowing through some more recommendations on hymns, and I believe some lectionary stuff is up. So the work is moving forward. And it's enjoyable to be a part of it.
Yeah, God is certainly blessing that effort, I believe. So thanks again for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Martin. Thank you, Sally.
Caleb, thank you. You obviously have put a lot of thought into this and are doing a great job, because there are just so many moving parts to this thing. And I think you had a very measured and very make sense, common sense approach to project management, especially when you're dealing with so many varied technology skill sets and so many different kind of experiences that people are bringing to the table. I think he's done a nice job at putting together some technologies that are truly helpful for the project.
Yeah, probably one of my favorite interviews we've done in a while, Martin. I really enjoyed his insight and the fact that you could just see his heart at work in it, you know, and that's really neat. I'm sure that's true of all that are involved in the project. There's a lot of desire to do a great hymnal for when it does come out and everything. So exciting to kind of get a little behind the scenes look at that and to see how technology is helping with the process.
So maybe we can just dive into our chapter just a little bit to whet the appetite of our listeners. By the way, we're writing this as we go along. So chapter 3 is written, chapter 4 is not. So we're kind of doing this as we go, and we're sharing it as we go with a tool called Sway. And Sway allows us to give some visuals to it and highlight some different things, embed video, some multimedia kinds of things. And as we mentioned, we're talking about project planning. And there's obviously a lot that could be said about project planning. But before maybe even we talked about some of the nuts and bolts of planning, we talked about some of the things necessary for the project planner. And we begin to go through a little bit of a Bible study on Nehemiah, who was maybe one of the best project managers of all time. You might remember that he was the one that came back from exile and had to rebuild the wall the wall around Jerusalem under some very adverse circumstances. And it started way back in the beginning when he was just really passionate about Jerusalem, the state it was in, the state the wall was in. And what he did first was essentially he spent time in prayer. The ability to have a successful project, at least the projects we're talking about, really need that component of prayer to sit down and say, Lord, what is it that you want me to do?
You know, Martin, sometimes I find myself needing to put on the brakes and realizing that I don't start that way, and that I really should turn over my concerns and look to God for guidance in how I approach different projects that are on my plate. And of course, you know, whenever we turn to God in prayer, he promises to listen and be there with us and everything. But I think that is just a really great lesson to emphasize. Kind of an insurmountable task that he was up against over in Babylon, you know, thinking about rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem, and to start with prayer and ask for God's direction and blessing on the efforts. It's almost as if we had this discussion in Bible class this week, actually, that, you know, we can't necessarily make a bad decision because God's going to bless our decisions and our work as long as we turn to him and serve him earnestly with our efforts and stuff. So definitely turning to him in prayer is the right place to start.
So you have that to look forward to in this chapter, because we go through a little bit of a progression of things, and it doesn't obviously stop with prayer with Nehemiah. He executes on a plan. So apparently God gave him the plan, the approach to take, the words to say, and off he went to Jerusalem with some things in his back pocket that really suggest or are kind of a good illustration of the need for planning. You can't just jump in and expect things to kind of all come together. You have to really think and kind of anticipate what might be needed. In the case of Nehemiah, he had to anticipate he needed safe passage, so he needed a letter from the king, and he needed material, so he needed also a supplies list and materials he needed and the blessing of the king to procure those. So he went into it like that, and that was kind of in my mind a natural progression into what project managers would call risk management. What could go wrong? What do you need to anticipate going into a project, whether it's a VBS or a field trip or a building project? You have to kind of anticipate that things will go wrong. Could be a funding shortage or lack of qualified volunteers or competing events or bad promotion or materials not showing up, or you're not making the right plans for follow-up or poor team communications. All of those and more could go wrong with the project. And just taking the time to admit that some of those could go wrong and then have some kind of plan to mitigate that risk is going to go a long way to a successful conclusion.
So I think what I'm hearing, Martin, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the old adage, ignorance is bliss, doesn't apply to project managers.
It apply real well to a project team.
You're not going to be a wise way to go.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
The second component, which we spend quite a bit of time dealing with in the book is what we would call resource management. And maybe the most important resource, and there are all kinds of resources that a project might need, but one of the most important one are the people. Trying to find the people who would both serve as volunteers in maybe a leadership capacity, serving with you, people that would serve on the leadership team, but then also the people who would volunteer to do things that are necessary to move the project forward. So the project team is incredibly important, and we kind of outline in the book, in this chapter, some of the typical roles that you might need on a project. Of course, you need somebody in charge, the project lead, who coordinates team meetings, develops the project plan, the schedule, the budget. But there's also other important responsibilities that in many projects require some time and attention. Communications or promotions, you know, making sure that everybody's aware of what's going on, what's needed, prepare mailings, materials, handle registrations for VBS, for instance. Maybe somebody responsible for volunteer management and recruiting, so organizing all that, and then maybe somebody responsible for training, addressing questions, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just a sampling, but you need to kind of think ahead, plan ahead, and make sure that you've got all your bases covered, or you're going to get stuck doing it all, and that doesn't usually go real well, at least in my experience.
And I think it's a good opportunity to look at people's skill sets and passions and, you know, match them up appropriately with the projects at hand. One of my favorite book series is called the Mitford series. At Home in Mitford is the first book. And it's based on an Episcopal priest in his parish. But he's really good at tying together different people with different skills and interests and needs, because serving does satisfy a need of those people as well. And so nice to kind of see it all weave together. Of course, that's fiction, and real life isn't always so pretty and easily woven together. But I think it does give you an opportunity to engage people in your ministry efforts and engage them in ways that fit them well. I know in our congregation in Sleepy Eye, there was a gal who did graphic design as, you know, a full-time job. And it was wonderful to have her step up and work on different projects from that angle, involved in the communication and promotion and logo designs and things like that. And, you know, asking her to teach terrified her, you know, so we wouldn't go that way with that kind of person. So it is nice to pull together your team and see it function as all those different parts of the Christian church body, instead of just focusing on certain areas.
Right. One of the things we often hear, and I'm sure this hits home to a lot of people, from the person responsible for the project and trying to recruit people to assist, is it's hard. It's difficult to convince somebody to hitch up their wagon to yours and go down this road together. And I think one of the reasons that that is a challenge, and that people often say no when asked, or don't get involved at all, is that there's kind of a muddiness to what it's all about. What is the project about? What is the desired outcome? How long is it going to last? What's my responsibility? What time commitments? Those kinds of things. And a suggestion we make in the book is write or craft a project summary with all that information, so that it can be cut and pasted in an email or followed up with or mailed. You know, it's a physical document that says, this is what this is all about. It's almost a promotional piece as well as a guidance piece, where you know what direction the project's going, of course, but it's helpful for somebody else maybe not familiar with the project or not familiar with what it takes to do it, to read something, to have something in their hands that says, this is exactly where we're going. And it kind of instills a little confidence, too, that, hey, this group has it together. It's not going to be this nebulous, you know, three-year commitment that I'm making to who knows what. So you've got, you know, a good summary that says, hey, this is what it's about. This is why you should get excited about it, and why it would be great to apply your skills, your time and talent stewardship identity to this particular project.
You know, I bet that has a positive effect on the person doing the asking as well, because you have confidence. You know what you're asking them to do, and it's all spelled out for you. So, you know, it's a win-win. You're not just going into the nominating committee role without some tools in your arsenal to be able to share with people. So, you know, taking the time to write out that project summary helps everyone involved, I would think.
Right. This is a technology podcast, so we should probably talk about some of the cool technology tools that are available or at the disposal of a project team these days. And there's really no shortage of these. We just kind of highlight a few of the ones that might be most useful right off the bat with, you know, let's say document storage. And we talk about, we talked, I think, last month about Google Docs as being one of those tooltips. That seems to be a tool that could be put to good use for a project team, but that's not the only one. We talk about Dropbox. We've talked about Dropbox in the past, a good cloud storage solution and a syncing solution where you can share documents almost immediately across a project team. OneDrive is another one of those, iCloud if you're Mac-based. So just a good project document repository is almost a must. If you create any kind of digital assets, you need a central storage place versus the hard drive of the project leader who emails them around. So there's no reason not to use some of these storage solutions. Many of them are free. They're all very reliable, secure, and pretty easy to use, even for the technical newbie. It's not hard to get people comfortable with these. As we heard Caleb talk about, there are ways to get people comfortable with that. He talked about screencasting and step-by-step kinds of instructions and just kind of the persistence necessary to kind of get everybody up to speed.
Yeah, I'm thinking firsthand of a group that I serve with, a faith-based organization, the local resale shop that supports our local Lutheran high school, and being part of the board there, we have a variety of people. It fits exactly what you're talking about, Martin, because we have young and old and people that are tech savvy and people that have trouble with email communication. We got it all, but we have a definite need to share documents and things, and so moving towards Google Docs was our adopted solution, and just kind of chipping away at it and little by little and reminding them and providing the links time and time again and,
right,
you know, helping them with their login and things. And over time, they're getting more comfortable. And as they are, they're seeing the power of it and the fact that it's really a benefit to us as a board of directors to be able to share files that way. So patience and empathy, just like Pastor Bassett said, I think are key to rolling out.
Yeah, that was a great word. I like the way he put that. And the benefits are manifest. You have the ability to share in real time. You have the ability to just have a single source of a document versus versioning and making sure everybody's got working off the same thing, and then collaboration. There is a whole nother set of tools that kind of goes beyond just document management. We highlight those in this chapter as well. Tools like Trello or Basecamp, which are true online project management tools, which come with things like task lists and calendaring and scheduling and those kinds of things, the ability to comment on other tasks and ask questions and capture dialogue that's going on around tasks right within the tool. So those would be two that come to my mind, at least initially, that you might want to try. And the good news is that they're free to try. And actually, in many cases, the free version would be sufficient for a lot of the projects that I'm thinking of at church or school level or faith-based organization level. So it doesn't hurt to give those a try as well. And there are others, but those are the ones that I would maybe direct people to.
Martin, last chapter we started kind of a thread that we hope to weave through the book, in that we're looking at a VBS project as our example. And so I invite users to head over to our Wells Tech show notes page and check out a sample Trello board that we've put together with the VBS theme on it. So you might see how you would begin to structure a VBS type project using a tool like Trello. We'll make it public so you can go in and take a look and see the different functions that are available there.
Yeah. And maybe the last thing that we should highlight here with this chapter, which is the last section, is the importance of standards. Standards are always important in project management, but I would think especially when you have a variety of maybe people running projects within a church or school with varying degrees of knowledge around project management. So the more tools, the more standards you can give them. How do you start a project? What are the steps that you take? Maybe a starter project with the documents that are pretty consistent. Here's the calendar you can use, and here's a communications approach, and here's how you write requirements, and here's an example of risk management, and here's an example of a project summary. Just a good thing to do, and you know, there needs to be obviously somebody leading this charge who's going to do this, and in many cases it might be the people that are watching or listening to this podcast that would say, yeah, these are the tool sets that are likely to come in handy for anybody kind of starting any kind of size project, you know, it's VBS or building project or whatever, so that they're not having to reinvent the wheel every time, so that they've got some comfort level. And that might be something that would help somebody say yes who would normally say no because they wouldn't know how to begin to lead a project. But if you've got them a head start, then they might be more inclined to do so.
Yeah, one example I can think of, Martin, is just that recruitment letter or email. Saving an example of that and saying, insert project summary here, you know, but you've gone through the process and thought out and come up with a great communication tool that can be used in multiple settings. So it's like a template that people can customize for their particular project needs. I know my husband, Kevin, was asked to be on a particular board. And the next day in the mail, he got a letter that restated the invitation to consider serving in this way and spelled out, you know, this is going to meet this many times a year, and these are the types of responsibilities you will have, and you'll be on the board for this length of time, you know, and someone has thought through and kind of standardized project standards that communication, and it's easy to reuse for different projects.
Almost like an FAQ, you know, something that mm-hmm. you can anticipate the questions that somebody's going to ask. Well, how much time am I committing here? What am I supposed to do? What kind of skill sets do I need to have? All those kinds of things. So, all good stuff. So again, go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, for more information on this chapter, or go to the book website, which is withallyourheart.tech, I believe. And you can see each chapter as we're building it. You can read through chapters one, which was basically introductory, and then chapter two, which I mentioned was discovery, and now we have a project planning chapter, and I don't even remember what chapter four is about, but
it'll be a surprise to everybody.
Yeah, it'll be a surprise to us and you, so
yeah,
it'll be something good. I'm having a ball working through this process, and just it's kind of clarifying my own thinking about project management. I don't know about you, Sally, but it takes, you know, it's hard, and that's a lot of what we do, you know, here in our positions, is managing projects. So it's helpful to force ourselves to think through this and then apply it. And like you mentioned, Sally, it's always good to have an example. So we're using this VBS project, which is a, you know, very natural and very typical thing for a lot of churches to have to be involved with. So maybe give it a little bit more dose of reality, how this all applies. So.
Very good.
Let's move on to the next segment of our little show here, and we call it News in Tech. And I wanted to talk about a kind of an unfortunate turn of events, depending on your perspective. We have often, or at least I have often, recommended to people using OneDrive. In fact, we did it in the book, this chapter. We said OneDrive would be a good solution for document storage and document sharing. And I believe it still is and a great value, but there was some news lately that came out of Microsoft that basically said, well, we used to be able to provide an unlimited amount of storage, but we're going to have to ratchet that back a little bit because of, you know, some abuse. So with an Office 365 subscription, which we've also recommended, which is probably an incredible value for a lot of people, whether it be for a home or personal or school, that is now at 1 terabyte of data versus unlimited. Now, for many people, probably 95% of people, 1 terabyte might as well be unlimited because that's a lot of space. Very difficult to fill that much space up. But for some of their lower tiered plans, they for their $1.99 per month plan, that's going to 50 gigabytes. And this article that we'll put in the show notes talks a little bit about some of the new limits that they have for free OneDrive storage. It's decreased from 15 to 5. That's still more than some of the other carriers like Dropbox. We've mentioned that before. So just wanted you to be aware that that is the case with OneDrive going forward. Again, still a great value and then probably a better value when you throw in some of the Office tools that you get for an Office 365 subscription. But they are changing their plan and just didn't want to be everybody's backup mechanism at this point. Really, OneDrive storage is for, you know, working documents, things that you want to share and collaborate on. So that's the news from Microsoft these days.
And it looks like if you are a user and you're over those free thresholds, they're going to give you like a year to, you know, decide if you want to start paying and get or get your stuff off so that you're under the free threshold. So it's not going to be just an instant.
You're just not out in the cold altogether.
Yeah.
All right. Wells Now. What's going on in Wells, Sally?
Wells Now. We want to point people to a really nice feature on the Wells website called Worship Helps. Maybe we've talked about this in the almost 8 years of podcasting we've done, Martin, but I can't remember talking about it very recently, and we want to make sure people are aware of all the great things out there. Worship Helps is a little service. It typically comes out if you subscribe via email, like on Mondays, I think. And it's the lectionary readings that are done for the coming Sunday. So you can read up on what you can expect to hear in church the coming Sunday from the different Bible readings assigned for that Sunday. And not only read up on it, but there's some questions and exploration that you can do around the Bible passages that are prescribed for the coming Sunday. So, for instance, here I'm looking at next Sunday's Saints Triumphant. I'm sorry, that would have been last Sunday. Or no, I think it's coming up.
Yep,
it's dated November 9th because that's the day it's released on the web. But this is for the third Sunday of End Times, which would be next Sunday, the 15th. And it gives you a little theme for the readings of the week. It tells you the reading, and then it has questions and answers provided just give you a little more thought-provoking look at the readings that are part of the lectionary series. And it looks like they provide five of them. So they've got supplemental readings, traditional gospel, supplemental gospel, traditional second lesson, supplemental second lesson. So it covers all the variants of the pericope that are out there for our congregations to make use of. So we enjoy using this. We actually use this kind of sporadically. We haven't done it in a while in my family, but we'll read up on the Bible verses, like one section of the Bible per night when we're having dinner together. And then we read through the questions, and it just really makes a difference when you're in church then on Sunday and you've prepared yourself for the lessons you're going to hear and considered them in advance of the worship experience. And so I recommend it highly. I'm a fan of Worship Helps. Get it in my inbox every Monday and enjoy taking a look at what is to come in the next Sunday service.
That's one of the reasons that a pericope exists, so you know what is coming up, and this service takes advantage of that and does ask some very pointed questions and even sometimes some application questions. So it's not only that you're familiar with the text and what's going on, so it's not going to be a surprise on Sunday morning and it gets reinforced on Sunday morning, but you're already thinking about application. How does this apply to me in my life, which is awesome. So it's also available in the mobile app, Wells Mobile. You can pick that up at about the same time and read it there as well.
Very good.
Let's move on to our picks of the week.
And I'm going to share my screen one more time because my pick of the week has to do with Wikipedia this week. So if you use Wikipedia for research of any kind, perhaps you're a teacher or a student who makes use of Wikipedia articles for research, or just in your day-to-day living, maybe you're on a trip and you want to research a little bit about the area you're traveling to, there's a really cool Google Chrome extension that you can install called Wikipedia Quick Hints. And it's an extension, you know, typically extensions sit up on your bar maybe and can be turned on and off along the top bar of your browser, but this one actually sits in the address window. So it's a W with a star on it, I believe, that sits in your address window, and it only lights up when you're on a Wikipedia page. So I'm on the page right now for Martin Luther, and what's powerful about it is that this Martin Luther page has about a bajillion links on it where you can go and look at all different Wikipedia articles related to the text that's provided in this article. So if you're interested in learning more about the Diet of Worms or whatever it may be, his excommunication and just excommunication in general, the Pope, there's a page on Wikipedia about that, you know, all of these. But the problem is you typically have to click on all these bajillion links to go look at those articles. Now with this Wikipedia Quick Helps installed, I can just hover over the various links and I get a preview of that page that it's linked to on Wikipedia. And I can actually mark the article or read the article by clicking the links that are provided there. So it just will speed up your Wikipedia experience, especially if you do a lot of research and you're researching things like Martin Luther where there's a bajillion links. It's just a little convenience that it pops up in a little overlay pop-up window, and you can get a taste for what you might read if you go to that link. So again, Wikipedia Quick Hints is the name of the extension.
Very good. I think both of us have recognized that going to Wikipedia or resources or reference works like that can be a rabbit hole experience where you click on one link and then you're clicking on another and another, and you're four generations away from maybe the topic that you really were researching. This just gives you the ability to kind of stay there. You can dip in where you need to, but ultimately you can stay focused on and what got you there.
Yeah, it just reminds me. I have a son that will probably not like this extension because he loves rabbit holes on Wikipedia. He could just live on Wikipedia and learn and pursue whatever. So maybe it's not for everybody, but definitely a little bit of a time saver if you do a lot of research there.
Yeah, absolutely. Good pick. My pick is something that we referenced as a news in tech, I believe, a few weeks back, and that is a new service that YouTube has promoted recently called YouTube Red. YouTube Red is a $9.99 subscription per month that allows you to get rid of the ads for YouTube. And I've been increasingly frustrated with the amount of ads, especially when it comes to workshops that I do or presentations that I do. And this probably resonates with teachers especially, that you have this pre-roll ad, then you have ads in the middle, and you have ads at the end, and you really have no control over them. And many of them you can't even skip anymore. You got to sit there for 30 seconds before your video starts. So YouTube Red gets rid of all the video ads that go along with watching videos on YouTube. There are a number of other benefits that come with it, if that weren't enough. And $10 a month is probably a pretty steep price to pay for that. But one of the neat things I used with some of my recent workshops, in fact, at State Teachers Conference, I I highlighted this, I could download all the videos that I wanted to a mobile device. So what I was doing during my presentation is presenting from an iPad, and I could take all these offline. So the admittedly crummy bandwidth that we had at the conference, for whatever reason, was not an issue because I could play all of my videos in an offline fashion. Now, there are tools that we've talked about in the past that allow you to download videos, but this is really super simple and legal, I think, to be able to grab these videos and take them offline, and you don't need to be connected with a good internet connection either, so that's not going to be your challenge either. So I could save entire playlists in an offline fashion. It also does offer background playback, so if you switch away from it on your mobile device, it can keep playing. The audio can keep playing in the background. And one other benefit of this is that it comes with Google Play Music, which is an online music streaming service. So not only which is $9.99 in and of itself. So not only do you get Google Play Music, but you also get the ad-free experience that you get on YouTube. So you go month to month. You don't have to sign up for a year in advance. I found it to be a real great tool, especially if you're using YouTube videos a lot in what you do, whether they be workshops or classroom presentations or whatever. So something that you may want to consider investing in or have your organization invest in for you, that's YouTube Red. That's youtube.com/red if you want to learn more.
You know, Martin, it's really nice that you're there to try those things out and share your experience. I guess that's a plus of listening to the Wells Tech podcast, because not everybody can try everything out, but at least when we do, we're able to share that experience.
I should mention that there's a 30-day free trial for this too. So if you want to take advantage of this for 30 days, you can do that without forking over the 10 bucks. So,
good to know.
Sally, do we have a ministry resource today?
We do, and I'm going to, haven't heard from Pastor Rob Gunther lately, but we're going to hearken back to something that he shared with us a while back. It's a website called newmoverchurchpostcards.com, and it's a place to custom design and send postcards to people moving into your area. And so they have access, and you can specify by zip code or radius around a certain location, whichever way you want to identify these people. But they know who's moving in, and they will send this custom designed postcard to them to welcome them to the neighborhood, so to speak, and invite them to your church. And they do it at a really affordable price. The price is 79 cents per postcard, and that includes the postage and everything. You don't have to have nonprofit status with the post office or any of those kind of hoops you have to jump through. There's no minimum number of mailing that you have to do, as you would with a cheaper postal rate that you probably experience with different mailings. This just happens for you at that low cost of 79 cents a postcard. I mentioned Pastor Gunther at one point in the past. He had sent us this example of a postcard that he designed for this very purpose, to invite people to their church and school there in Kenai, Alaska. And so just really professionally done. They have a lot of templates and imagery that you can make use of right on the site, or you can upload your own and come up with a really nice design. I did a little digging, and they also have just mass mailings as well. So if you wanted to, advertise your Easter service or whatever it may be, the price is a little more expensive. So 250 postcards for $289, 1,000 for $639. So it goes down with the quantity depending on how many you want to send. But again, includes the professional postcard design, a really nice sized postcard. They do the printing, they manage the mailing list and address it and send it out with standard postage, all for that price. So several options there, particularly targeting people that move into your area with new mover postcards. Seems to be very professionally done.
Yeah, this would, when I was, way back when I was doing this in the ministry, I remember what a pain this was. I mean, get the list together, procure the list, do all the things that the post office requires you to do to actually get bulk mailing rate or nonprofit rate or whatever. This just kind of removes all of that and just makes it super simple to do, and nicely packaged product as well. So, good ministry resource. We heard from another one of our listeners for our featured video this week. Perry Lund talked about one of his favorite topics these days, Office 365, and we found some really nice videos that talk about how to work with Office 365 and manage that whole experience for your users.
Yeah, we're going to tag this on our presentation and teaching playlist, the Wells Tech playlist we maintain, with this Office 365 admin update, where they've enhanced things, made it more intuitive for things like password resets and things like that, all within the administrative portal. So that was a great find, just to find this, but it led me to the channel for Microsoft Mechanics. And Microsoft has a show to keep you up to date on all that's going on with Microsoft. They have playlists that they are curating around Microsoft Server, around Office, Surface, Azure, things like Power BI and Office 2016 demos, just a lot of different things. And seems to be really professionally done. They aren't super long videos, so you don't have to commit a lot of time to it. But in a relatively short amount of time, probably under 10 minutes, many of them, you're picking up on a lot of things that are happening, kind of cutting edge with the Microsoft products. So definitely, if you're a Microsoft Office, and that's what you've adopted for your church or school as the platform that you create on, I think consider a subscription to the Microsoft Mechanics as a little professional development you can do to stay up to date on what's happening with the Office tool set and with Microsoft in general.
Very good. That brings us to the end of this show, and I'm looking forward to next show already, because it's quickly becoming one of my favorites, and that's our community feedback show, where all we really talk about is what you want to talk about, meaning you listeners and viewers. So if you have contributions to the show, would like to share what you're doing, share questions, whatever you'd like to share with the show or with the people who watch and listen to the show, that's what we're going to talk about. So if you go to wellstech.wells.net, you can find all kinds of channels that you can talk to us on, from Facebook and Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, all of those are at your disposal, or just send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. You can send us a voicemail. Lots of ways to get in touch with us, but you drive the show next week, so make sure you get your community feedback in, and that's what we will look at, respond to, and have a good time with, and I'm already excited about it. That's a fun show.
Yeah, it's all about the conversation, and we attribute much of Wells Tech to the conversation that you listeners provide, because you're out there doing ministry real time.
Yep. On the front lines, I like to say. All right. Thank you, Sally, for all that you do. And again, every Tuesday afternoon, 4 o'clock, if you'd like to join us, you can do that. Make sure that you're tuning in whenever you can, and then sharing this with your friends, loved ones, neighbors, whoever you want to share this with, the more the merrier. So thank you for joining us this week. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Blessings. Bye-bye.